Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, all the new iPhones and the Apple Watch 4, Lenovo's latest X1 Carbon is so bright, and Toshiba's new NVMe drives might be coming to a system near you. All that more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 483, recorded on September 13th, 2018. That's an excessive iPhone, people. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 months free with a one-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/Twitch. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch's weekly show that aims to bring you hardware news. Desktops, laptops, consoles, mobile, components, process technology, and occasionally commentary on the state of the political scene as it impacts computer hardware. A slightly different introduction for us, but I'll say it right now if you want. In all known or unknown universes, joining us today is Mr. Al Malvitano, PC Purse resident storage guru, and occasional Tesla enthusiast. I dare say, though, his Tesla enthusiasm is on the downside today. Alan?
Yeah. It's negatively impacting my computer hardware on wheels opinion, but, you know, I digress.
So you've spent, are we referring to a Tesla Model 3 that is in the shop?
Yeah. Model 3 is in the shop, and then got a Model X loaner, and that broke down in my driveway, so then they swapped it out for a Model S loaner. So I'm just going through the whole round of them, I guess, you know.
Has your Tesla Model 3 spent approximately 20% of your ownership time in your driveway or in their, shop?
In their shop. Yeah, it's been in a few times. Hopefully, they will get it right at some point in the future.
The thing I love about your fundamental optimism is, despite the fact that you had purchased a Tesla Model 3 that had spent approximately 20% of its lifetime in the dealership fixing various and sundry problems, that you still went out and bought a used Model S.
I did. You know, the intent there was, hey, maybe I'll have a spare car for my wife to use, because we actually got the car for my wife's commute, which is like, you know, almost a couple hundred miles every day. So we were just getting killed on gas. So, you know, rolling computer on wheels or not.
Do you have like 4 electric cars now?
Yeah, we have a Volt, 3. Although I'm in the middle of selling the Volt. The Volt, even though that gets 50 miles per gallon, if you're doing 200 miles a day, that still costs some money.
Really? You know, that's $6-$7 bucks?
Per day. Right?
On top.
That adds up when you're doing it, you know, every day, right?
So the Volt only gets 50 miles to the gallon?
Yeah.
I thought it was higher than that.
Well, It gets a lot higher than that if you don't drive enough miles to run out of the battery. Right.
And how many miles is that?
On a first generation Volt, it gets you like 40 miles. Okay. And then after that, it has to kick the generator on, and then you get about 50 miles to the gallon.
Well,
you know, anyway,
but,
you know, computer technology is computer technology on wheels. Sometimes not so good.
Sometimes anyway. Not so good. Truer and fewer painful words have ever been spoken. Or rarely been spoken.
Speaking of fancy computer technology with large screens, right?
The flagship iPhone XS.
And, yeah. Well, hold on. XS is what I mistakenly thought when I first saw the leak. And I was like, seriously? They're going to call it XS? Like, guys, you know. But really, it's supposed to be the XS, right? I know. That's how it's supposed to be spoken, though. Like, proper speaking of it is XS, and then XS Max if you want a bigger screen, which apparently you can get now with the same sort of OLED and all the other iPhone X features.
Super Retina.
Yeah. So higher resolution XS, now, right?
I'm still calling it the XS, man. If you insist, I'll call it the 10S. But the XS has a 5.8-inch display. The Max has a massive 6.5-inch display. They're both OLEDs. The biggest screen that's ever been on an iPhone. Just put it in perspective, an iPad mini screen is 7.9 inches. So this is within an inch. This is so phablet. It actually is bigger than Samsung's Note, or at least looks and feels bigger. $1,000 starting with a 64 gigabyte version of the XS. Excuse me, the 10S. The 10S Max starts at $1,100, and the prices kind of climb from there. We'll get into that a little bit later. A lot of people say that a lot of people have been hands on with the 10S Max say it doesn't feel particularly ridiculously large.
And that's because there's almost no bezel, right? It's basically all screen on the front of it. So, yes, granted, it is a huge screen, but, when it's almost nothing but that screen on the device, then you can kind of get away with the larger size, right? Like, compared to that iPad mini you were talking about, iPad mini has like another inch worth of bezel on it, right? So it's even bigger, right? So, I think Apple was comparing the 10S Max to basically like the 8 Plus, like what used to be the Plus size phones, right? Except just without the borders on them. There you go. Handy comparison right there, right? It basically is the same form factor, just maybe a few millimeters narrower, screen just taking up the whole. Yeah, and the notch, of course, is on the top, which I'm still not sure how I feel about. I was one of those that purchased an 8 when, the 10 came out. And I was like, well, I was a few generations behind. I needed to upgrade anyway because mine was just kind of getting old. And, I just opted not to go for the whole Face ID thing. And I was like clinging to my home button. It will take it from my cold, dead hands sort of thing. And I kind of still feel the same way, even with this launch. Like, I'll probably still be good personally just with my, 8 Plus.
It's interesting looking at these, right? So they went with stainless steel, which I'm hoping means it is less likely to bend. They still have a camera bump on the back, the glass back, wireless charging. They're really proud of their PVD color process. I love reading off of Apple's website. Gold and space gray finishes using an advanced physical vapor deposition process on the stainless steel bands for colors and reflectivity that beautifully complement the glass. Tell us how pretty we are.
I personally think it's really cool that they're able to make things that like look gold without the cost of gold and stuff like that now. Like that's handy. But I mean, I have vapor deposition on my glasses in order to make them, anti-reflective coating and whatnot. Yeah. That stuff rubs off eventually. Like, is it going to be the same
deal
on the stainless?
You're holding it wrong, Alan. You're holding it wrong.
I was cleaning them wrong.
You're supposed to hold
it with
two fingers while wearing a glove.
I just kind of wonder. I hope that holds up, and you don't end up with a bunch of people with partially gold and partially just stainless phones, like with parts worn off, right? Looks cool.
A12 Bionic chipset, a little bit faster than the previous Apple CPU, another step on their future to maybe smirching the Apple processor lineup into their laptops.
7 nanometer. Kind of interesting. Don't forget that, right? 7 nanometer process on the processor.
That Intel,
which is right. I mean, think about how many of these things they're going to crank out too, and they're doing it on 7 nanometer. That's kind of impressive in itself. These days you're selling more phones by volume than you're selling computer CPUs by far, right? That's interesting. What was your take on? Did you catch like the 5 to 10 minute? Kind of pause that they took during their normal thing to go into the whole environmental aspect of things? Did you catch that
Not
part?
Not particularly. I mean,
They basically went into this whole thing like, hey, we're all of our tin now is going to be recycled. So from recycled sources as opposed to, raw sources. you know, and they even went down the road of, hey, we're trying to make our things last longer so you don't have to change them as often, which seemed odd at a launch announcement for a new phone.
I think they're partially, I mean, I feel a part of it's, there's a big sustainability thing going on, as there should be. And I mean, there's also some, there's certainly some loud noises about fears of availability of certain minerals and certain materials moving forward. You know, given the kind of cost you're looking at for these, I'm not entirely surprised that they're pushing sustainability. Because when you start looking at the cost of these, it is tremendously expensive. I mean, let me see if I can pull
it up. It is certainly up there. Now, granted, they do have a lower cost model, which we'll probably get to in a minute here. But I mean, I personally kind of, you know, inadvertently subscribe to that anyway, because I don't upgrade my phone every time the next one comes out. I usually try to go, you know, 2 or 3 years.
We don't have the 3 yet. And the 3 prices we've seen are based on a chunk of phones that fell off the back of a truck in the Ukraine somewhere. But, you know, the Pixel 2 XL starts at $850. And, I was looking at the pricing earlier, and it's crazy because they've kept so many of the older devices in the lineup. Starts the iPhone 7. $449 for 32 gigabytes, another $100 to jump up to 128 gigabytes, the iPhone 7 Plus, 8 Plus, and then the actual new phones start going. Technically, the SE is still in there somewhere, except you're not actually able to buy it off the Apple website anymore, but it'll be available on third-party resellers, which I thought was curious. They've kind of disowned the SE, which will break my wife's heart because she loves that phone, but apparently that was... not an experiment that Apple felt like continuing with, or possibly they've just decided that the new watch is so large, it's practically the size of the SE, and that solves the problem.
I think they're trying to fill that void or shift that budget prospect, as absurd as it sounds. They're trying to shift the budget thing over to what is now the 10R, which has a price that sits between where like the 8 and the 8 Plus sat. And not only is the price between those two, but the size is actually between those two.
An A12 Bionic chip.
Yeah, you're still getting all the other newer features. Right. You don't get the second camera, but the first camera is the better, newer camera, just a wide angle only with no zoom. Separate zoom camera. You can still zoom the photo, obviously, like you normally could. Mm-hmm. But that's an interesting proposition, because it's like the only real thing you seem to lose is it's not OLED. It's an LCD. All the other stuff still seems to be there. You know, same notch, same Face ID, all that other stuff seems to carry over. Bezel's a little bit thicker compared to the OLED models, but it's actually surprisingly thin compared, like, given that they're doing this with, a smaller form factor device, and that they're pushing it, you know, they're pushing the screen out further, and they're doing it with an LCD, and they're also somehow managing to get it around that notch, which I previously thought you kind of needed to do with OLED out of convenience, if anything, because OLED is, you know, more apt to shape into weird, weird screen shapes than an LCD.
This means they made a more complicated LCD layout.
LCDs usually like to be square, right? I said this on the podcast yesterday. If you get a Nest thermostat, it has what looks like a circular screen on a Nest thermostat, right? But inside there is a square screen.
they didn't do that because LCDs like to be square. They did it because the least expensive way to produce an LCD is to make it square. And the truth is that notch may be sitting above the LCD. I mean, let's wait for the iFixit teardown to see what it looks like.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know. I may be less impressed than I should be, simply because I could get why they did this and they like the idea of the screen going into the corners, but I find the notch, I feel like I find the notch more loathsome than I do the screen going into the corners impressive, which may be more about me than about the actual phone. You know, and it's kind of crazy because technically this is the biggest LCD they've ever put on an iPhone. It's just not as big as the OLEDs they're running now. Color actually is supposed to be amazing on this. And, you know, and looking at it side by side, when you look at it, the iPhone XR next to the 8 Plus, you know, it is nice to see all of those shiny colors go into the corners. I've got some friends that are kind of up and down on the idea of the home button going away. Real mixed feelings about that. You know, I also laugh that every time they mention the A12 Bionic, it's about the neural engine for amazing augmented reality experiences. Although depth control on the portraits seems a little bit more practical for that. I also kind of feel it's disingenuous, whether it's Android or any Android device or an Apple device, talking about how finally you're going to have speed when these processors, for the vast majority of what people are doing on phones, are vastly more powerful than any of the phone apps, because the phone apps have to run on significantly less powerful applications. You know, two performance cores, like up to 15% faster than the A11 Bionic. What I thought was really interesting is they're claiming the efficiency cores, the four efficiency cores, are using up to 50% lower power than the A11 Bionic. That is pretty fascinating to me. And they're also claiming like 50% faster graphics performance. You know, that's really that's curious to me. And I also feel like is in some ways as kind of over the top as the neural engine sounds, I am really kind of curious to see how it evolves and how developers use it over time. Right. You know, they're basically saying the neural engine recognize pattern, make predictions, learn from experience. And that it will, you know, I don't know, you know, it's, yeah, you know,
the neural engine stuff is like a chicken and the egg sort of problem.
Yeah.
Which is where, you know,
quickly
it used to
find
be,
all your pictures of dogs.
Sure. But it's
Apple quote.
I agree. But you have to have enough saturation of those products with those neural engines in the market to kind of get the developers to get on board and put more effort into developing for, you know, actually take advantage of it. So maybe that's another reason why the 10R has that same, you know, neural engine inside of it. And, you know, hopefully you get the people that got the quote unquote budget version of the phone, you know, because they didn't want to spend $1,000 or higher on the other two versions of the 10. They'll still have those other features, and, you know, hopefully devs will take more advantage of that stuff since it's just in more things, right?
Part of what's crazy is that the iPhone XR is now considered the budget iPhone. That's starting at $750 for 64 gigabytes, $799 for 128 gigabytes, $899 for 256 gigabytes. As I think we mentioned earlier, the XS starts at $1,000 for 64 gigabytes, tops out at $1,349 for 512 gigabytes, and then the Max starts out at $1,100 and tops out at $1,449 with 512 gigabytes. I covet a phone with 512 gigabytes of storage. You will pay for it severely, and it's not that out of line, because we were looking at SD cards, because I don't think I think it was like Shannon and I were talking on a tech thing, and she didn't realize that there were 400 gigabyte, like the new Moto Z3 is rated to support up to a 2 terabyte SD card, micro SD card. And I always laugh because, okay, it's great that the controller can actually read a card that big, but no cards remotely near that size exist.
Sure.
But it's what I didn't realize is there's finally like a PNY. Like, I knew about SanDisk having 400 gigabytes micro SD cards. And where did it go? There it is. PNY's got a... I want to say a U1 card.
Is it like a 512?
512 gigabyte micro SD card. which is $349. And then a SanDisk Ultra is selling for SDXC UHS-1 card. That's selling for $150. And if you can actually find one, the Extreme, the ones that go up to the U3s that go up to 160 megabytes per second, are selling for about $250. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, when you do get up to that that notch to jump to 512 gig, you're actually getting a decent amount of storage for, you know, for the money there, given that it's not just like a micro SD card that's doing it with a really tiny size. Now, granted, the iPhone has a little bit more room to work with. It has basically like one flash memory package on the board, and, you know, they can stack dies within that package. Probably, I'm not sure how high they go, but, you know, to hit 512 gig with current generation TLC flash, which no doubt this has in it, you can actually get 512 gig in one package, like four dies high. So, you know, it's not hard to do. But yes, you are paying for just raw materials there, right? You're paying for flash memory storage, which is kind of pricey still, regardless of if it's in a phone or in an SSD. So,
what do you think of the Watch 4? Because
they added these. There are some features they added, which I think they didn't. They were coy and they didn't say if they're going to work on the older versions or not. But like, you know, if your heart rate is too low, they're actually going to start warning you now, as opposed to if your heart rate is abnormally high, right? So there's other warnings that probably will just work on the older models, but they weren't specifically saying you only get this with the Apple Watch 4, right? One thing you definitely will only get with the new one is the electrocardiograph thing, which I think is novel and a cool idea, and that they're even pursuing. Like, I don't think it's done yet, but like, you know, they're gonna have like FDA certification or whatever. They've met all of the things for this to actually be like, you know, a certified device that can take a reliable ECG, which I think is cool, especially if you're a kind of person that needs to actually be recording that stuff and trying to get it to your doc for any particular reason. You know, very handy to have you know, sort of a now standard, just a watch device that can just do that. And it's not like they added $100 or $200 to the cost of the thing just for it to do this extra, you know, medical grade function, right? Which is pretty cool in my mind. During the keynote, though, every time they showed the screen and talked about how it was 30% bigger and they were showing content on the screen, and like comparing and showing, like, you know, compared to look at how much further out it goes closer to the bezel, right? Every time that happened, even in that picture right there, if you look at it, the regular Apple Watch is on the right with the older screen. Mm-hmm. So it's only like a couple of millimeters further out. So that's not 30% bigger. So I just kind of don't know where they're getting that from. You know,
it looks like they've reduced the space between sort of the edge of the display and the edge of the bezel with the way they've got it constructed, and they've gone from like 38 millimeter to 42 millimeter, 40 millimeter to 44 millimeter. You know, it's not edge to edge, which is one of the things we were reading about during the leaking phase of this. But it's crazy, right? As silly as this sounds, right? The 44 millimeter, I'm going to quote TechCrunch here, now displays 977 square millimeters versus the 3's 740 square millimeters, while the 40 millimeter case is 759 square millimeters to the 3's 563 square millimeters. So
that's probably a legit 30%. It just, in the pictures, man, it really doesn't show.
Super familiar. Yeah. It's kind of crazy, because the other thing they did is in terms of filling out, when you look at it in terms of filling, you know, the case isn't much bigger. It's a curious choice. I think it, you know, aesthetically, I actually think it looks better. You know, the back looks a lot. The back of it's crazy because of the hardware they stuffed in there to do the electrocardiogram 30 seconds. I'm actually kind of super curious about this. Apple Watch Model 1 was a super disappointment for me. But when they finally got to the second and third versions of the operating system, things got a lot more interesting. But it seems like you can finally do a lot of interesting stuff on the phone. And with the additional complications, you get a lot of information on the phone fairly quickly. Fascinating.
They threw the senior citizen play in there with the fall detection. Right. So now they're trying to get you to get grandma one of these.
Can you clap twice to alert the authorities? Detect atrial fibrillation. Kind of crazy. Detect atrial fibrillation. There it is. Yeah, the watch got cleared by the FDA for direct-to-consumer purchase, a first for over-the-counter offering, first for over-the-counter offerings for electrocardiogram-enabled devices. So,
yeah,
not the first ECG-enabled device to receive FDA clearance. So, be interesting to watch people like taking EKGs of themselves on the bus and freaking out. That'll be a very Bay Area thing.
Somebody like. Going back and forth between like taking their pulse, like with their hand, and then like sticking their finger on their watch, and like, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean it's cool, you know. I was a holdout. I didn't get one until the third generation, you know. Still don't regret it. Like I'm not like.
How's about when good?
It's been fine for me. Nobody's confirmed this that I've seen anywhere, but I got the one without the cell radio in it. I'm pretty sure it has the same size battery as the one that has the cell radio in it. Meaning that where most people were getting, you know, like a day, if they were lucky, out of their first or second generation Apple Watches, like this thing will go like 3 days, sometimes breaking into like the fourth day before I need to throw it on the charger. So I think that kind of cheats the system a little bit if you get one and you don't use the cell functionality or you don't even get the one with the cell radio. You know, because you know they had to build it to have enough oomph in that battery to be able to support phone calls over cellular. And if you don't need that function, which I don't, you know, I'll just use my phone or at least have it on me. I'm not that sporty of a guy that I need to go on the run and don't want the added weight of the telephone in my pocket.
Right.
So
there you have it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, ladies and gentlemen. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ExpressVPN. I've been running that at home quite a bit. Doesn't matter if you're at home and hiding things from your ISP, because really, does your ISP need to know everything you do? If you're in a cafe or a hotel, you know, if you're not aware, if you're sitting on public Wi-Fi, you know, you can be exposing yourself, right? You know, you're online, you're in the Starbucks, you're using the internet, and maybe you're sharing that internet with a bunch of other people, and maybe one of your apps isn't locked down the way it should be. That can leave you exposed. So I've been running ExpressVPN because I work with a lot of hackers and pen testers, and a little extra security is kind of like the way I like to roll. ExpressVPN, they got easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer. Your phone, your tablet. I've got a big green button so you can turn it on and off with one click. Because once in a while, you run into things that don't necessarily want to run over a VPN. But the whole point of running a VPN, secure and anonymize your internet browsing, encrypts your data, hides your public IP address. You can safely surf on public Wi-Fi. You don't have to be snooped on or have your personal data stolen. It's rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Costs less than $7 a month. And as a bonus, you can choose where your VPN pops back onto the internet. And that means if, you know, for example, if you have a thing for curling that's only available in Canada, well, you can pretend to be in Canada. Huh? It's nice. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free with a one-year package at expressvpn.com/twitch. That's expressvpn.com/twitch for 3 months free with a one-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/twitch to learn more. If you're not running a VPN, you travel a lot, it's time to get a VPN. expressvpn.com/twitch is a great place to start. Even if you don't travel, and maybe it's just time for you to not let your ISP track everything you do. What are they doing with that information? They may not care, or maybe they're selling it. You could be running a VPN and keeping your life a little more secure. ExpressVPN.com/twitch, and we want to thank them for their sponsorship of This Week in Computer Hardware. Toshiba XG6 1TB NVMe SSD upgraded to 96-layer BIX flash. That's a whole lot of title for a stick full of memory. What's so this is essentially OEM. So this would be sold by Toshiba to, say, Dell or HP or Apple or somebody that was looking to purchase NVMe drives for their desktops or laptops. What's going on with 96-layer BIX flash?
So the idea here is, you know, you're just trying to cram more storage into a given piece of space, right? A given piece of two-dimensional space. So 96 layers is the next step in the push for that. Toshiba's been trying to get this stuff out for a while. They were kind of, it took them a while to get even really production BIX going with, even in the XG5, which is the, you know, predecessor to this model. But now that they've kind of got that ball rolling, it looks like they're, you know, they're just marching right along pretty well, actually, if they're already transitioning to 96 layer, so that, you know, kind of gets you more bang for your storage buck when it comes to trying to produce an SSD, you know, and have a given margin and actually try to make some profit off of it, or try to, you know, sell it for, you know, sell it at a lower cost. This particular model is very similar to the XG5. XG5 was in a lot. Actually, you're looking at both of them there on the stream. XG5 versus XG6 looks like basically the same SSD. The only difference there to speak of is that there is just now 96 layer flash in there instead of the, you know, the previous 64 layer flash. XG5 showed up in a lot of things. Like, it was in a bunch of Microsoft tablets. It's in, there's a good chance you probably have a Toshiba OEM SSD in a laptop if you bought one in the past year or two. They really pushed their OEM side pretty hard. And it's been working out for them. They've been moving a lot of product. The thing that's optimistic on my side for the XG6 is that not only did they upgrade to this, you know, more storage on a given die flash memory, the performance of this product is actually pretty darn good. When you put it in terms of comparing it to other retail SSDs that you might buy. You know, as far as random performance goes, it's up there. It's not quite to like your 970 Evo, which is typically like the chart topper for a NAND product. It's not up to that level, but it's definitely up with the rest of the pack. If you scroll down a couple of charts and you go to that mixed test, you can see the progression in the top three entries on that chart, which is where you go from the RevoDrive 400, which was also a Toshiba product. OCZ got acquired by Toshiba, so they're not called OCZ SSDs anymore. Now they're all under the Toshiba brand. But you go RD400 to XG5 to XG6. It's almost a linear progression. So like every time they've gone to the next generation of their product, they've taken another step at, you know, faster on performance. And that's been working out pretty well for them. Now they're to the point where they're getting right up there with, you know, even beating other products that were retail upgrade products, right? Maybe not all of them, but definitely doing pretty good. You know, even if you consider it in the middle of the pack, that's still pretty good for an OEM SSD, right? Like, in the past, you know, the stigma that you typically see with OEM SSDs is like, oh, what's that crappy SSD that you're going to get in this laptop, right? So it's nice to see the possibility, you know, of you combine Toshiba being very popular as an OEM part with now this newest model of the Toshiba OEM part is actually pretty dang competitive. So, you know, less to complain about in your next laptop purchase. Basically. And that's, now remember, it's still a dice roll. You don't know for sure which SSD you're going to get. But you know, if you give it a few months after the laptop launches and you do some Googling around and you see if someone's done any kind of teardown on it, if the teardown has, you know, something like an XG5 or an XG6 in there, chances are if you bought that same thing, it's probably going to come with that same part in there. OEMs have been known to kind of bounce around OEM SSDs, like which source they use, but the ones that I've seen that have used Toshiba specifically tend to just have only Toshiba in whatever that thing is, and they, you know, there's not much reason to move around because Toshiba seems pretty competitive on their pricing to those resellers. So the other part of the reason I wanted to publish a review on this guy, even though it's not something that you can purchase, right? We usually try to review things you can actually buy, is that the XG6, Toshiba has told me, might very well end up also becoming a retail part. So they'll probably put some other name on it. It might not be called XG6, but basically that same product will, there's a good possibility of it coming to the retail sector, which is also good, right? And Toshiba's hasn't had a nice competitive part in a while now. They kind of had, you know, they've had their downs. Let's just put it that way. There's been a lot of prior SSDs out of them that either they came too late, you know, like they came a year or two, you know, the performance would have been great a year or two ago, but now it's, you know, superseded by everybody else, that sort of thing. So it's basically they're caught up now is the good news, which is good news for everybody because, you know, just make things more competitive overall. And hopefully it'll just up the bar in OEM SSDs in laptops in general, because now if you see, you know, brand X and Y has these Toshiba parts in their laptops and their storage performance is great, you know, hopefully all the other guys are going to get on board or at least be more critical on which OEM parts they're choosing to put in their machines and just kind of raise the bar storage performance wise for everyone else, hopefully. And just get that many more people off of eMMC flash drives inside laptops, which is just, you know, not great to put in a laptop.
Not great. Not oh, great. My goodness. Not great. I've been SwitchMid podcast. What I thought was a laptop issue turns out to be apparently an issue with my ISP. So I'll be fervently typing back and forth on that because I particularly love the questions when I'm talking to an ISP. They're like, are you sure it's not your router? And at one point, I terrified a level 2 tech. And I'm like, well, I was running a Netgear Orbi. And then I ran an Eero. And then I ran a Synology router. And I'm getting the same results on all three of those. But I've got 4 more mesh systems or routers that we can run through and test this to verify it's not my router. That was a thing I did with Comcast once, which made them make strange gurgling noises on the phone. Because apparently their bluff had been called at that point. But
yeah, pretty sure it's not my router since I've tried every possible brand and model almost in existence, right?
Yes, I've just tried in excess of $1,800 worth of routers and mesh networks. And they all report that your speeds suck. But usually not a problem, though. My apologies for the interruptions. To Kevin, our long-suffering producer. But I switched to something you can't actually see right now, which is did a review of the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, Lenovo's latest update, the 2018 update to this series. And I can see why Ryan loves these so much. A little bit bigger than the screens I'm used to, because it's a whopping 14 inches instead of 13 inches. And I've never had an issue with the XPS 13's keyboard, which are pretty fantastic. But I started typing on this, and I was reminded exactly why Lenovo kind of rules the roost in terms of keyboard quality on mobile devices. I'd pull my webcam off, but I'm afraid I'll never get back onto the adapter before the end of the podcast. Big update for them was going from dual core to quad core processors on the i5 and i7 versions of this. And I want to say it starts at around 1,356, and then they have an optional screen upgrade. And it was crazy for me to kind of take a look at how bright this screen is. And let me pull up the exact numbers, because I feel that I need to explain this in robust and unnerving detail. But you're looking at their normal screens, like a 1920 by 1080 anti-glare that's running about 300 nits. And then they've got a if you can find the model configuration, a WQHD screen that's running at 300 nits also with the anti-glare. And the one they sent us for testing is the 2560 by 1440, the WQHD, their Dolby Vision version of it, which is a 500 nit HDR screen. And in terms of absolute HDR performance, 500 nits is hardly the end-all and be-all, but that's about twice as bright as a typical laptop. And if you like working out on the porch and there's sun,
it's amazing how nice it is to have 500 nits. I do wish they had the anti-glare screen on the ThinkPad X1. But this was, I was actually, it's, you know, again, it's been a while since I played around with one of these. And I was, you know, was like, wow, ThinkPads, they're really nice. I forgot about that
screen. That new screen of theirs is so good that they actually, in the ThinkPad X1 Yoga, which was previously the one where you could get with as high as an OLED screen, which had amazing brightness and color, they actually don't even offer that anymore. They just offer this that same screen in place of the OLED option.
That makes sense. Yeah. 2.5 pounds on this fingerprint sensor. You know, it's funny because if you haven't run a Lenovo laptop in a while, you're like, oh yeah, pointing sticks. Those are a thing still. I never really used the pointing sticks back in the day. Oh, if I can just get that angled the right way, we might actually see it. And it turns out I cannot look at a camera, stand upside down, and point to a pointing stick at the same time. But
yeah, there you go.
I always laugh because I have friends that have used those literally since they were first introduced like 20 years ago. I still don't use them because once I started using trackpads, I used trackpads totally. But they do have the discrete buttons on the top. Really good feel. It was interesting for me, how bright that screen was, and the fact that because they're not going for ultimate thinness on this laptop, not that 0.6 inches is that thick, they've got along with the Thunderbolt 3 port for charging, like a pair of USB 3.1 ports, an HDMI jack, a headphone headset jack, a micro SD card reader, 4G LTE is available in some models. You know, so the entry level on this is about $1,367.10 with a 4-core, 8-thread Core i5 and 8 gigs of RAM. This beast was Core i7 with 16 gigabytes of RAM, the 500-nit HDR screen, and a 1 terabyte SSD, which is a glorious amount of storage, is running about $2,237.44. My one big complaint is the glossy screen instead of the non-glare screen, which would be nice. I do want to shout out, Laptop Mag has been keeping track of this. It's one of their favorite laptops. They still recommend it, but they have become aware of some quality control issues. Back in July, some keyboard or screen issues on 3 different purchased units, and 3 out of zillions is probably not a lot, but it did get Laptop Mag's attention. But they're still recommending it. Of course, the unit they sent for testing is flawless. I got to say, I'm kind of jamming on, you know, the performance and how good that keyboard feels to type on and how bright that screen is out in sunshine. So not the thinnest laptop, but certainly one of the cleanest ones and kind of a classic ThinkPad. A lot of black, a little bit of red, and pretty good performance. Keep an eye on it for that. I'm going to hold on to this for a few weeks and see how it holds up over time. But, you know, it's nice.
Good keyboards, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, and it should be for $2,237. It should be absolutely ripping, to use a phrase from an Australian friend of mine. But, and, you know, I got to say that the entry-level configuration, you know, with a you know, 4-core i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gigabyte on the SSD, is not a bad rig. And of course, there's some enterprise stuff available for this if you're managing a large amount of them. But I'll be very curious to see how it holds up over the next few weeks. And if you're curious, if you've heard the rumors of Verizon's new 5G ready phone, because Verizon looks to they're saying they're going to be first with 5G, although T-Mobile seems to, I think, have made the first equipment purchases. I thought it was fascinating. Shannon did a review this week of the Moto Z3, which is the first 5G-ready phone, but it won't be 5G until the Moto Mod, the snap that snaps onto the back of that actually shows up, which will make it a 5G-compatible phone. And It's interesting. I like the theory. I'm not sure I want to have to snap a Moto Mod on to get the features, the performance features on this. And I know people who do run Moto Mods, but usually they run the batteries or the speaker. And of course, to do 5G with the Z3, they'll have to snap off their favorite Moto Mod and snap on the 5G Moto Mod, unless, of course, the 5G is their favorite Moto Mod. But you know, 5G is coming. I feel like we are going to be buried with 5G announcements at CES, if not a lot of actual hardware. So we shall see, sir. Anything else going on at PC Per you want to tease us about or shout out about on the show?
Just, you know, testing more stuff. Got a few more Thunderbolt external portable SSDs in. My digital discounts put out a new model, so I'm testing those. Still have the chicken and the egg problem there, because if you try to use them on a desktop might not actually have Thunderbolt, like, for data. It might actually just be a USB-C that only does USB 3.1. So so there's kind of that, but, you know, it's just good to see more of these things coming out, so that hopefully maybe just some desktop boards will start coming without the need for an add-on adapter card to give you Thunderbolt out the back of your desktop, right? Ken's working on some stuff. We got NVIDIA stuff coming, right? Everybody knows the NVIDIA stuff's coming, so we're looking at that stuff, seeing how it does.
Should be like a week, right?
Yeah, I think it's about a week. Just look out for like the onslaught of new GPU stuff, right? It's been a while.
How many games will it launch with? We wait with bated breath.
Yeah, basically.
You sound so excited.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not the one that's testing that stuff. I'm in the other corner working on my storage stuff.
Ryan Ken, is right now running benchmarks in a corner and cursing under his breath.
No, that's Ken. Ken's doing it this time.
Lucky Ken.
It's the same cursing, the same, you know. Well, all the other stuff's the same. It's just the different guinea pig in front of the keyboard, basically.
So you probably, actually, I guess you probably, because they, you might be able to answer that question, but it's probably under NDA. Do you actually have some of the NVIDIA RTX cards in the warehouse right now, in the shop right now?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow. Are you playing any RTX games with real-time ray tracing?
I have, nothing has been played yet.
Okay.
Oh, so, yeah.
So close.
Sorry.
It's okay. You know, I'm waiting for that phone call that's, it's like, this is amazing. Yeah, three games that use it.
I have not personally sat in front of it. I really want to. Like, I want to see, like, what the hype is about and actually be sitting at it and see what the frame rate looks like. And, you know, the kinds of things that you could not determine from trying to watch it over a stream. Right. So, you know, we'll see.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully by next week, at the latest, the week after that, we should be allowed to talk. I think if the math is right, by the time we do the show next week, we should be able to talk about RTX.
Probably.
If not, we'd remind you to keep an eye on PCPer.com. It's where Al Malvantano and Mr. Ryan Shrout work and play, and where Ken is suffering right now to get you the first NVIDIA RTX reviews. With that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. We're known as Twitch, and you can find us at twit.tv/Twitch. That'll give you links to all the different RSS feeds, links to the past shows. You can listen to the show there. You can watch the video version of the show there. And we want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Alan Malentano.
We'll catch you next week on Twitch.